Welcome to the Disc Golf Show, a podcast brought to you by Levon and Christopher Stalsfus. Join us as we discuss all of the latest in disc golf news.
Welcome to episode 4 of the Disc Golf Show. We missed a couple weeks, and so it's really nice to be back for another episode. We've got a bunch of topics to talk about, so before we get into those, let's dig into our drink of the day, of the episode, of the week. Today we have For Real Milkshakes. I don't know if you ever heard of them or not, but they're really good. You probably did hear about them because they're kind of all over the place. You can find them at Sheetz. And yeah, they're really good. I have Oreo. He has, what do you have?
Peanut butter cuppy.
PB cup. Peanut butter cup.
They're a little bit on the melted side of life because I got them a little bit ago, but they're good.
They're still good. A great milkshake for any occasion.
So yeah, as he said, we were gone for a couple weeks. Mainly just busy and been playing a lot of disc golf, practicing a lot of disc golf. And really been focused on disc golf in our personal lives. But a lot has happened in the professional side of disc golf. A lot has changed since we last had an episode. We've got a lot to talk about, so we should jump right into it. I think we're going to start right away by jumping into the previous two Pro Tour events, which is the OTB Open and Portland.
Yeah.
Portland Open? Yes, Portland Open.
We have a lot to talk about there, so let's start off with OTB Open.
So, the OTB Open, Simon Lazat takes down the OTB Open, and the last time Simon Lazat has won a Pro Tour event was, I believe, 4 years ago. So he finally wins another one. Very, very crazy. It's truly crazy to me that he was able to bring this one down.
Yeah, I mean, he has just, last few years, barely even been on tour. He bought a house. And just, I mean, you know, playing decent, but just nothing super, super great. And now just to come out and to win OTB, it's just crazy.
Yes.
Simon is back.
And the last time Simon Lazat won a Pro Tour event was in 2018, the Memorial Championship presented by Discraft. And yeah. He shot very well there, and that was the last time he won. So it has been a long, long time. As a lot of you probably know, he had an injury that he had been dealing with last season, and into the beginning of this season, it was still bothering him a little bit more. So he was kind of just taking a while to get back into the swing of things and really didn't have that phenomenal of a start to the season. He started off the season right away at Waco, 60th place. And then he went 35th, 6th, 2nd, 1st, 1st. So he's actually improved at every event, which is crazy. He, aside from winning back-to-back now, he went 1st, 1st. But, yeah, so he was just a quick upward trend from the beginning of the season. And it looks like he has quite a few of the tournaments booked for the rest of the season. So it's going to be really interesting to see where it goes from here. But yeah, I don't think we're going to stick around with the OTB Open much because we've got a lot to talk about Portland, and that is more recent. So we're going to go straight to Portland here and talk about that. Simon Lazat also wins that. Just crazy. Like, people rarely win back-to-back wins anymore at all, ever. Just because the fields are so stacked and There's a lot of really, really good players. And it's just extremely difficult to win. And to win back-to-back is just on yet another level.
Yeah, it's just something we have not seen for quite a while now. Used to be kind of like, well, Paul in 2019, obviously Paul Macbeth, he absolutely dominated. But since then, we haven't really seen any kind of anything like that. And the field has just been getting better and better. And now to see back-to-back wins is absolutely crazy. And especially for Simon Lazat, because before this season, he hadn't been playing super great. And yeah, it's just really, really crazy.
And as a lot of the new people in disc golf probably don't know, is that it's kind of just the whole story of Simon. If you jumped onto the disc golf scene in 2020 or 2021, which is kind of when the boom in disc golf was, you don't really know the true Simon because he wasn't really around as much because of injuries and stuff. But Simon's a showman, and he's not really the type of guy who goes out to win. Like, that's not his ultimate goal, really. He wants to win. He tries to win. He does the very best he can. But it's not like Paul Macbeth and Ricky, where every single weekend they feel like they're going to win. It's not at all like that. And so he hasn't won a lot of events, I think, due just to that. He's not as dedicated to the winning part of it. And he's probably not as disciplined on the practicing side of it and stuff. And I think more recently, with dialing back his game, he's been focusing a little bit more on dialing it in and shooting really well rather than just being a showman as much. But he still throws some of those big shots. So, yeah, it's just as far as the Pro Tour standings are concerned, it really, really jumped him up in the Pro Tour standings. Because every single win is actually 100 points. And so Simon Lazat is now into the semifinals. So as far as he has a bye into the semifinals, which is just all a projection for the end of the year. This is just current standings. But yeah, so he's in eighth place with Pro Tour points now. And the two wins really, really boosted him up. So very, very huge wins there. To go back to back is just truly incredible. And the world rankings right now, Simon Lazat is in sixth place, so still very high in the world rankings. So it's not really like a real surprise. I mean, he's just behind Paul Macbeth at fifth place. So it's just, we're just not used to it. And it's really fun to see. And he you could tell he's really enjoying himself out there. And it's just fun to shoot good disc golf, so very understandable.
Yeah, but Simon Lazat was not the only one who was kind of like an underdog. Garrett Gerthy, we can talk about him. I mean, he also nearly took down the win. He was also just shooting really, really good, and I would almost say that he was even kind of shooting like worse than Simon up till now. At least in my mind, I didn't think of him as being as good as Simon like until now, just as far as generally finishes in the tour.
No, I mean, that would be otherwise known as world rankings. And in world rankings, Garrett Gerthy is not even in the top 10. It looks like Garrett Gerthy is currently in 17th place in the world rankings. So definitely not at all the caliber of play over time that some of the other players have showed. as far as Pro Tour standings for the 2022 season, it looks like Garrett Gerthy is in 21st place. So once again, not nearly as good as Simon Lazat. So yeah, he really hasn't had a fabulous season. It looks like his best finish at an Elite Series event was, okay, it looks like DDO. Hold up. No, not DDO. Masters Cup, maybe.
He was 7th in, wait, Music City Open. That's just Silver Series.
Yeah, that's not really serious. So his, yeah, it would have been 19th at OTB was his previous, no, 16th at Vegas. Sorry. Yeah, 16th at Vegas was his best finish. So nothing at all in contention for the win until this one. Even at Las Vegas at 16th place, he was quite a few strokes back off the lead. So,
yeah.
Very much a kind of a breakout for the year for him. And yeah. It was just a true battle. I mean, going into hole 17, they were tied, both parred. Hole 18, they were tied, and it's a par 5. They both threw drives that were good. Simon threw first. Garrett Grethy's drive is quite a bit farther than Simon's. So Simon decided to attack for the pin for eagle. He turned his drive over and went OB, which means he would have to have thrown in for birdie from probably 200 feet. And so it was very, very likely bogey. No, he would have to. Yeah. So it was a very likely par. So all Garrett Gerthy really had to do was just pitch up a shot and take his birdie. And he was in a very good position that he could have easily birdied. However, he just turned his forehand over a little bit, threw it OB as well. And then he threw his upshot outside the circle and kind of behind a tree. Simon throws his upshot and parked it, and Garrett missed his putt. So a rather dramatic finish, but very, very close, and just a crazy battle. They were tied for holes 8 through 11 as well. For 4 holes in a row, they both birdied, and they were tied that whole period. So really just an epic battle. I think probably the other biggest notable mention is Isaac Robinson. This is, as I've been hearing, I'm just going to confirm that real quick, but I've been hearing that this is his first event back after college. So it looks like he played Waco, Music City, and Champions Cup. But this is his first event back to the full-time tour, as I've been hearing. So really, really probably felt good to him to come back here on tour and just start out by playing exceptionally well. His first round was a 12 under at Blue Lake.
Just kind of interesting fact about him. He's actually, you may have heard of Ezra Robinson. I think a few years back, maybe at Ledgestone or Worlds, I'm not sure which. He was playing pretty good. I think it was Ledgestone. And Isaac Robinson is actually his brother, so that's just kind of interesting. I don't know really what happened to Ezra Robinson. He hasn't been playing super great that I know of. But yeah, just kind of interesting.
Yeah. Also, Gannon Burr, we've been talking about him a lot in our previous podcast. And once again, just a fabulous finish. I'm continue to be amazed by this guy. It's rare. It really is rare. And I don't think people talk about him enough because he's 17 years old and he's just popping off fantastic finishes one after the other. He has now had, it looks like he had 8 top 10 finishes in a row in Pro Tour events and majors. His last 8 events, has not finished outside of the top 25 at all this year. Just incredible. Truly one of the most consistent players on the tour this year. It looks like Calvin Heimberg has also not finished outside of the top 25. Ricky has not finished outside of the top 25. Chris Dickerson has not finished outside of the top 25. And that after that, there's nobody else. So he's in a class of four who have not finished outside of the top 25 this year, which is very, very incredible.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see when he's going to win because it's bound to happen sometime. And it's just going to be interesting to see what that event will be. And, yeah, I can't wait.
Well, yeah. I mean, he did win Masters Cup, but then that was pretty much a win. But
Silver Series. Because
the field is just as stacked almost as any event. But, yeah, he did not only win an Elite Series. Yeah. I think we could talk about Paul McBeth for a little bit. Just not quite it. So going into the final round, Paul McBeth was 5 strokes back of the lead, and he just did not start out well. Or he didn't start off badly, but he just so missed holes 1 and 2. Hole 1, he actually threw straight out of bounds right away. Hole 2, he just so missed. Hole 3, he birdied. 4 and 5, he was just off a little bit. It's just not quite. And then he bogeyed hole 6, so he was even par through 7 holes. And then he went 6 birdies in a row from there. And that pulled him back to, I believe, 5 strokes back of the lead, 4 or 5 strokes back of the lead, and it was looking a little bit better for him. And then he got a quadruple bogey on hole 14. It was pretty windy and also raining really hard on that hole, and he turned it over out of bounds and turned over his second shot out of bounds. And then he threw a hyzer for his third shot instead of a turnover, and then he threw it out of bounds left. So he was had to get up and down for his 8 then from there. So very, very, very bad hole for him. Completely took him out of contention, which he was hardly in contention anyway. Although, if he would have parred that hole and then... I mean, if he would have birdied out, he still wouldn't have quite been able to pull it off. So, really, he wasn't actually in contention, really. But,
yeah,
still a top 5 finish. So, a very good finish. And he's still having a good year. It's just, it's not a Paul McBeth McBeast mode year. I do feel that he could turn it on late again. And I think that would be interesting. But notably, he really didn't have any bad finishes aside from Dynamic Disc Open. He was 51st. And then at OTB, he was 19th. And those aside from that, he was in all top 10. So playing very, very consistently. It's just that I feel like he's just not quite closing it out. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of the season is for him.
Yeah, and also cool Radalin. I'm not sure how to say his name exactly, but he played pretty good again. Not tied for eighth, solo 8th.
And also not again, but...
Well, I don't know why I said again.
but yeah, this was a breakout event.
Kind of another person from the lower ranks coming up, so that's good to see.
Yeah, and he's also been playing relatively consistent, but definitely not at all good. Jonesboro, he was 74th. OTB, he was 53rd. Champions Cup, he was 44th. Texas States, he was 50th. So a lot of really pretty low finishes.
Yeah.
So it was cool to see him kind of break out. And I was just so impressed by his game. Really, I was. I've seen him play a little bit here and there, seen clips of him here and there, but I watched him a little bit more in this event, and it was just, I was really impressed. His putt is really, really good, and he can throw super far, and I truly think he has a lot of potential. He just has to, you know, probably pull together the loose ends. Looking at his overall stats, it looks like his putting is not exactly his strong point. It looks like he throws the disc very well. He's 10th in circle 1 in regulation, first in circle two in regulation, which means he throws it inside the circle for birdie or inside circle two for birdie. So this is his throwing stats, and he's very good. I mean, he's fifth in the fairway hits and 20th in park percentages. So really good there. It's just that his circle one putting is 63rd, and I think he's probably losing a lot of his strokes to putting, which is unfortunate. Yeah, so he's losing strokes. He's losing 1.07 strokes to the field in circle 1X. And in tee to green, he's really doing a lot better. So, yeah.
All right, next up, we're going to talk about Eagle McMahon. Where is he at? What's he doing? We're going to talk all about that.
So, Eagle McMahon has not played very many events this year. He's completed a total of 2 events so far this year. He DNF'd at Jonesboro. He played 21st at Vegas and then 14th at Champions Cup. DNF'd at Jonesboro. That has been his season so far. His next event is Idlewild, which will be July 8th or 10th, about a month from now. So, looking forward to seeing him back at Idlewild. If you don't know, he did win Idlewild in 2021, I believe it was 2021. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see him come back and just see how it goes for him. I mean, coming off of an injury like that, it often takes a lot of time to kind of get back in the swing of things, but maybe he'll just jump right back in. I really want to see him back on the leaderboards. Him and Kyle Klein are 2 guys that I kind of miss. I haven't really been seeing them on the leaderboards a lot, and they're 2 guys that I just love to watch putt, and I love to watch throw. They're just really fun to watch. I think we'll also talk about Kyle Klein here briefly. I feel like he's just kind of been on the brink of success and on the just outside where you get the attention of the live cameras and post-produced even. And by his finishes, it looks like that is the case. We talked about Gannon Burr being the only one who has finished inside top 25 every time. Well, Kyle Klein only finished outside the top 25 once, and that was a 27th. So that, to me, is really, really shocking. That shows that he's not playing bad. He's playing really well. He's just a few strokes off of being in contention, and I'm not sure why that is. I'm going to look at his stats here just to see if we can kind of point out where he's losing his strokes. And it looks like it's just pretty spread out. He's not really excelling in anything, and he's not losing badly in anything. It looks like his putting is probably the weakest part. But yeah, I just feel like he's probably just has a couple loose ends that he hasn't quite really pulled together yet. So really, really hope he can get it together and have some good finishes so that we can see him on the top of the leaderboards. Okay, so a topic that we had mentioned in our previous episode that we would talk about sometime in the future was disc golf baskets and quality of disc golf baskets and then the size. I think we already discussed quality, but disc golf baskets are kind of almost an issue in our sport, if you want to put it that way. Some baskets tend to have a lot of spit outs. Some have a lot of splash outs. Somehow I feel like we need to get to a better place with our disc golf baskets. And along with that discussion is the thing of basket size. I've heard this discussed by other players. I think Paul McBeth has mentioned this already, that smaller size baskets could be a good thing. Just because it's a little bit crazy, the amount of big putts that are made. And I just feel like it would take maybe a little bit of the weight off the putting and a little bit more on the throwing if we would make the baskets smaller. And I don't think that would be a bad thing for our sport.
Yeah. Another thing I kind of thought about, or I guess I think Jeremy Colling was talking about it, is I think they should extend the circle. Just because maybe even only extend the circle. I don't know. Basically what that would do is it would put more importance on the circle one stat. So you could kind of, it'd be easier to actually see how good somebody is at putting by looking at their circle one stat. Whereas now they're just all so high, it's kind of hard to really know. Just kind of another interesting thought.
Yeah. Along that line. That's kind of a separate topic. That's more of a stat topic. But it is kind of along with the putting thing, I guess. But yeah, I think basket size, if you make them smaller, it would fix some of our issues, I think. It'd just be really interesting. I don't think it's going to happen, though. I really don't. And that's fine. I don't feel like it's something that needs to happen necessarily. I just think it could be beneficial. And yeah, as far as the circle size, I would agree with that. And it would eliminate maybe people jump putting from 33 feet, which I think is a little ridiculous. Because really, yeah, it's an advantage, but you don't need to jump up. If you can't throw a disc 30 feet, then I don't know.
What are you doing?
But that said, it does make it easier. So like at some points in my game, I jump up from 30 feet, or I jump up everything I can. And at other points, I'm not even jump putting at 50 feet. So yeah, but I do think it would make it better if they would make it bigger for multiple reasons. But it would definitely make the stats a lot more accurate if they would have the range for circle one from 10 feet to, say, 50 feet instead of 10 feet to 33 feet.
Yeah, for sure.
Which the 10 feet thing is for circle one X putting, which is basically just excluding tap-ins.
Yeah.
Which is a good stat, because if you're throwing the disc perfectly, then your circle one putting would also be perfect, but it would not actually be a reflection of how good your putt is. So yeah. I guess we'll just bring up a couple more topics kind of like this, controversial things and whatnot. So just a quick question, who is the GOAT?
Ooh. That's a good question, and a lot of people are going to have a lot of different answers.
Not really a lot of different answers, but yeah.
Well, different answers with strong opinions behind them, I guess.
There's only two options.
Which is what?
Ricky and Paul.
Yeah. But, undebatably. Okay, what about, like, Ken Climo?
I didn't mean to say Ricky and Paul. I meant to say Paul and Ken Climo.
Okay.
Yeah, that was just really just a, I don't know why I said Ricky. But yeah, Paul McBeth and Ken Climo are, the in my mind, the only two candidates for this position. Because Paul has far exceeded Ricky's career in the same time period, which is just basically an absolute no-brainer that he's better. Whereas in Ken Climo is in a different era, and so you can't really compare it as directly because there was less competition, and that's why it's a big argument.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
So you think Ricky Wysocki could be in the conversation?
Well, I don't know. Maybe not. No, but
absolutely not.
I feel like there's still a chance that he could get it, but it would be very unlikely.
If he wins three more world championships, and a couple more USDGCs and about 50 Pro Tour events, then yeah. Okay. The 50 Pro Tour events was an exaggeration, but the rest weren't.
Yeah. But okay. Assuming that it is just between Paul Macbeth and Ken Climo, that is tough because it's just really, really hard to know what... Yeah, I don't know. It's really... I feel like it's actually impossible to know.
Yeah, it is. And
it really is.
I would like to say Paul's a goat, just be the goat, just not a goat, but the goat, just because, just because, I like Paul, I'm a fan of Paul Macbeth, but it is a very, very interesting topic.
And you know,
and I don't think there's any way of really knowing.
You don't want to just too quickly take away that title from Ken Climate because he did win 10 world championships, and that's a lot. So you don't want to just.
Are you a novice?
12 times, sorry. He won 12 world championships, and that's a lot. So you don't want to just take away that title very quickly. However, there is definitely an argument to Paul.
It's just that being, it's kind of like inflation, except backwards.
Yeah, it is a bit.
So, yeah, that's just the five times are a lot more that Paul won are a lot more valuable than the Ken Climo's 12. However, another thing to think about is that the 5 and 12 sounds like really far off balance, like Ken really won a lot more. However, that's the entire difference of their total majors. So in other words, Paul Macbeth has won just as many other majors as Ken Climo. So I believe currently Paul Macbeth has won 13 majors. Ken Climo has won 20, from my understanding. So if Paul wins even just a few more, you're looking at really similar major wins. So yeah, it's, and I think in all this talk, I think there can be more than one GOAT.
Yeah.
And I think technically that's what we're going to have to settle on.
But yes,
Not technically speaking, but I think each maybe decade can, probably not decade, maybe every 20 years there can be another GOAT made. And I think...
Funny way of putting it, but yeah.
Another greatest of all time made. And yeah. I don't know. Tiger Woods is the GOAT. And there's like way back before the 2000s, there was other players that were the GOAT. And so, yeah, it's just like that in every sport. There's multiple GOATs.
Yeah.
So, that topic is settled. We talked about that for a while.
Okay.
And the next question, which is very similar, is who's the number one rank? So, according to UDisc, Ricky Wysocki is currently ranked number one. And who's number one? Who's number one now? And with a great amount of recency bias, I don't know. This is kind of a tough one to figure out without having some type of...
Okay, but what were you going to say?
I was going to say like Gannon Burr and stuff, but I don't know.
Okay.
Gannon Burr, Simon Lazat, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And like Paul and Calvin, maybe.
I would love to know a bit more what the UDisc World Rankings are kind of based on. But, yeah, I'm not really exactly sure, so...
I feel like I knew at one point, but I don't really anymore. But, yeah, I feel like Eagle is not really, because simply because we don't know what he's like until he comes back and plays again. I feel like Drew Gibson could maybe be a little higher up right now. Yeah. Aside from that, I don't really know. That's kind of a tough topic, so let's just move on to the next topic. We did not talk about FPO at all at Portland Open. To be honest, I really don't follow FPO a lot. I just don't find it as exciting, and if you find that offensive, that's okay. I don't know why you would, but I'm sure some of you will. But yeah, I do find it a lot more fun to watch MPO. It's just... feel like they throw a lot more highlight shots and it's just more interesting to me, but I know of a lot of people who are get much more worked up when they're watching the FPO, which is awesome for them. But anyway, another thing is I've been hearing rumors of the Pro Tour finale not being at Hornets Nest due to, I don't know, I guess there's projects going on there that are gonna, that would interfere with it, and so it's not gonna be at Hornets Nest, unfortunately. So they don't know where it's gonna be yet. And it just kind of got me thinking, like, about courses and how it would be cool if the Disc Golf Pro Tour would maybe stop, bring on new courses. That's my point. Bring on some more new courses to the tour. Yeah. Like the, what's that course called? Eagles Crossing. Like, bring courses like that just bring them into the Pro Tour and use those courses. I think it would be really cool if they would just explore their options and maybe find this course that nobody heard of that's really, really good and spruce it up and get it ready for an event like that. I think it'd be so fun. And it'd be cool to just kind of bring some of those courses to light rather than just going to a golf course and designing a course like we do nowadays. But
yeah.
Although I was very impressed with the Portland Open course. I thought it was really beautiful. But yeah, it's still golf course style, but it's much better golf course style than Emporia Country Club or something, in my opinion. I just still have this knot in my stomach about Worlds.
Yeah.
And I can't get it out. But maybe it'll be a lot more enjoyable than I think. I don't know. But I'm just really not excited about having Worlds at Emporia Country Club and Jones East. Not because of the people running it, not because of the sponsors, not because I think it won't be prestigious, not because I don't think it's a good town, not a thing like that. Just the courses. I just don't like the courses. Moving on. Do you got anything to bring to the table?
Yes. Okay, what is the future of Jomez?
That is actually a good question. And so I've been thinking about this somewhat. I think the future of Jomez is still existent. And by that I mean, I think Jomez is going to do a lot of the same things that they are now, and it's going to keep working for a long time. So yeah, so basically what I'm saying is right now what they're doing, they're bringing post-produced content. So instead of live, they are bringing next day coverage of each round. And it's very high quality. They are also doing a lot of practice round things and a lot of bonus coverage. And in the off season, they've done the Showmez, and they've done like the putting challenges things and stuff on the off season to entertain us. And those are the types of things that I think may become a bigger deal for them. And that's where I love to see that they are stretching outside of just what they originally were and pressing more into what and evolving into the future. And yeah. I think because they're doing that and willing to do that, they're going to be around for a long time.
Yeah. I'm not totally convinced that they're always just going to do post-produce, because even Disc Golf Network, I feel like eventually they're going to kind of make a good post-produced product. They're already releasing their live rounds they're available to watch after it's over. And so I just don't know. And also just people watching, more and more people are going to be going to watch it live, especially as the Disc Golf Network gets better.
So the whole thing of the Disc Golf Network releasing post-produced, I don't really see that being the problem, because I think they'd just as soon hire it out to somebody. I think it's more going to be a thing where post-produced becomes non-existent. And I just don't see that that's actually going to happen. But I think that's going to be what's going to happen if Jomez goes out. Because there was kind of two ways it could have went. the Disc Golf Network and Joe Mez could have competed, or they can work together. And they've chose to work together. And I think for that reason, you're not going to, or the Disc Golf Network isn't going to try to take over the post-produced. And so I just think it's okay. It's going to be okay. And Joe Mez is still getting a lot of popularity, and they're still growing.
Yeah.
And you just can't beat Joe Mez. You cannot beat Joe Mez.
Yeah.
They sure are so pleasant to watch. It's the easiest thing to watch. Their graphics, their commentary, their video quality, everything is just smooth and so easy to watch. The network is not like that. Bad quality, bad commentary. I said it. You heard it. Bad commentary.
Another thing. Bad comment.
Bad, horrible commentary. Anyway,
I was gonna say something.
I wasn't really done. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, I was still not done ranting. And it glitches all the time, and you're watching tons and tons of ads, sometimes for several minutes, even while the action is still going, which is another point I think we should talk about. And that is, why do they have so many ads?
I don't know.
Because we're paying for it, and yet we're getting tons of ads all the time. And maybe it's okay. Maybe that's just how it's going to be. I don't know. Maybe that's how it should be. Maybe it's the only way it could be. But it just doesn't make sense in my head that we pay to watch this and then we get bombarded with ads.
Well,
but anyway, it's not the same experience. What?
If it's a live stream, I mean, there is a lot of gap spaces where they're just walking to the tees or whatever. So I feel like it is okay to put ads in there, because what else are you going to put in there? Just video them walking around.
Well, they almost always have an option of somebody, because you have lead and chase card.
Yeah,
and then they always often have several cameras out on the hot shooters that are on lead or chase card. But yeah, when they put ads on crucial putts and stuff, or even just a generally long putt on lead or chase card, I'm just like, no, I want to watch this shot. And I just hate that. So yeah, anyway, but yeah, Disc Golf Network is just not near as pleasant to watch. However, with Disc Golf Network, you get the experience and the pressure of the whole thing. And you watch, they always show the players that are in contention. And that's one thing they do really good with. They show the players that are in contention or making a hot chase instead of just lead or chase card or both. Whereas Joe Mez, all they ever show is lead card. Aside from like one time at the World Championships last year where they did a little split thing. And so you just get lead card, but it's super high quality, super easy to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, and as far as the future of Joe Mez, kind of back to that sort of, I do think that they are always going to keep going, even if post-produce does die out. I think, kind of like you said, they're going to keep evolving. Their practice rounds are really fun to watch. They could start a podcast. There's definitely a lot of opportunities for them. They have a store. I mean, yeah, there's just, so I don't think the actual brand is going anywhere, for sure.
I don't think so either. They have built a very, very, very good structure around themselves. They're not just running on YouTube monetization or anything like that. I mean, their Patreon supporters are massive, and they're raking in the bucks over there. And that's going to, things like that are supporting them that people can't really touch. So I think that they're going to be around for a long time. So
yeah.
Yeah, just a couple players that I just thought about and thinking about the podcast that we should talk about is Anthony Barella and David Wiggins Jr. They're both kind of in the same category, in my opinion. They're both huge, huge throwers. They were both really, really good junior and amateur players, like really good, like GOAT type players in the amateur and junior divisions. They both are just entering kind of full-time tour. They were both in college. So I think they're both in very similar places. And they're two players that I'm super interested in kind of keeping an eye on to see how they do in the future, especially Anthony Barella. I just think he has a lot of potential.
Yeah. I don't really know a lot about David Wiggins Jr. Did he play Portland?
I don't know if he did or not. I don't really think he's quite on tour yet full time. But I don't know that for sure either.
Yeah.
I just know that he's coming back.
Okay.
I'm gonna look him up real quick here. So, David Wiggins. And he's just, they're both just beasts. Kind of in different ways, but David Wiggins is just a massive character. Okay, yeah, so he's not really on tour this year. He's playing in Preserve, Great Lakes, and Ledgestone. Those are his only three events that he's going to play yet. And he played at Tallahassee and Dynamic Disc Open, and he did not do very well in either of those. Anthony Barella, on the other hand, I'm going to quick search his name. And it looks like he's playing in a lot of events, and he's had very, very consistent finishes this year. So, yeah, I think Anthony Barella has really a lot of potential. All right, now for my favorite segment, or one of my favorite segments, Bad Stat. If you're new to our podcast, Bad Stat is where we simply ask Siri for a number between 40 and however many people are in the tournament. So
no, 50.
50? Okay, so in this case, we're going to ask Siri for a number between 50 and 109.
All right, let's do this. Pick a number between 50 and 109.
That would be 94.
Oh.
94.
That's a good one. 94.
That is low.
Very, very, very near to the bottom. So, now we scroll to 94. It's so much better if it's somebody we know. Anyway, 94.
Alrighty. There is a tie.
No, there's not. Okay, yeah. So, a tie between David Konoplev and I don't know. Anyway, we'll go with David Konoplev because he has a profile picture. The other guy doesn't.
Oh, okay.
So David Konoplev,
he looks like a young guy.
His profile picture is a hunched over guy holding a Halo Destroyer. He's not a hunched over guy. He's just bending over for the picture. Anyway, yeah, so I guess the point of this is basically just to see what they did wrong and maybe do a little bit of sputting and mocking because it's just fun. Because
it's just
but
crazy.
We don't really mean it because we understand whatever. Don't take offense.
Trust
We're just
me,
having fun.
We have bad tournaments too.
Yeah, and B tiers.
Exactly. Anyway.
Moving on.
Didn't want to. Okay.
All right. So his first round was 2 over par. His second round was 4 over par, and his third round was 8 over. So he doubled his over parness every
progressively
round.
Every time.
And he did not make the cut, and he didn't even play round 4. He absolutely sucked at putting. He was 106th in circle 1, which is just 3 from the worst, and 98th in circle 2, which is just 8 from the worst. So, sorry, 11 from the worst. Anyway, very bad. He only made 3 circle 2 putts out of his whole tournament. He missed 19 circle 2 putts. He only made...
That is honestly pretty bad.
15 putts in C1X. And he missed 8. So, yeah. And he also threw the disc very badly.
Yeah. So, 62% fairway hits. 101st place in that out of 109. So, do the math. 7% park percentage. Did not park 50. He
22
only,
OB strokes over 3 rounds.
Only parked 4 shots.
23. So if he would have just eliminated his OB strokes, just the shots he threw, he shot 5, 8, 7 under par. If he just eliminates his OB stroke.
Yeah, so round 3, hole 1 OB, hole 2 OB, hole 4 OB, hole 5 OB. And then he went a little better stretch.
Until hole 15.
And then another OB and on
multiple OBs on some of these.
He also got a 7 on hole 14, which is a triple bogey, I guess.
Not to mention Paul got an 8 on that hole.
Yeah, but so that's impressive. Good job. Way to beat Paul.
You beat Paul.
At least on one hole in one round.
But yeah, he just did not play good at all. Did a lot of things very wrong. However, he does putt with a Luna.
So that's
he must be unsponsored because it doesn't show he sponsorship. Is. He throws a Destroyer, a Buzz, and a Luna. So, yeah, he must be unsponsored.
He turned pro in 2021.
Wow. So he really is a new player. Impressive.
His PGA number
he's 969 rated. And up until now, this season, he played only B and C tiers. So definitely not a touring pro of any kind. And he had not had the greatest of seasons. He didn't win any events this year. Oh, he did win one event in advanced.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wait,
his
this
first
year?
Event of the year. Yes.
I thought it says he turned pro in 2021.
Well, I don't know. But you can still, I don't know. Anyway.
Okay.
He probably apparently hadn't cashed.
So he gained negative 6 point. Kind of a funny way to say it. But he gained negative 6.88 strokes in putting. So, in other words, he lost almost 7 strokes in putting. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that kind of wraps it up for what we want to talk about in bad stats. So, the last thing we're going to talk about is our own disc golf games. So, we've been doing 30-day, 30-minute putting challenge, and that is now completed. And it was a success. We all got a lot better at putting, and it just really proved to me that when you set your mind to something and try really hard to get better at it, you will improve drastically. But even in all of that, I still stick to my theory that just practicing putting every single day, you don't necessarily just increasingly get better at putting all the time. It's still an incredible roller coaster, and you're going to have bad weeks and everything like that. It's just that you get a little bit more consistently better and develop a little bit more of a structured putt.
Yeah. It's kind of like it just moves you to a new bad and a new good. So, like, if before when you were bad at putting, you missed, say, 15 footers, maybe now when you're bad at putting, you're missing 20 footers. So you still have ups and downs. It's just that overall, you're kind of just a little better.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's a whole just mindset thing. And, yeah, we've kind of been finding our way through it. But, yeah, we have been massively improving these past couple weeks, which is just awesome to see for us. And by us, I basically mean me and Christopher and our older brother, Kyle, and then one of our friends, Josiah. We're kind of the four that go disc golfing around here. We go together a lot, practice a lot. And yeah, so our scores have been getting a lot better. And I've already set some personal records at a couple courses this year already, which is, for me, pretty early in the season to already be doing that. But very glad to see it. And I am hoping to get out to some tournaments and see if I can win some tournaments, because my tournaments this year so far have been absolutely awful, but I'm confident that I'm going to play better in the rest of the tournaments this year.
Yeah. When is our next tournament?
I'm not exactly sure.
Not for a few weeks, I think, but yeah, coming up eventually. I can't wait.
There's a B tier in a couple weeks, I think.
Yeah.
A week and a half. Anyway, so yeah. I think that pretty much wraps it up for our talk. I don't want to make any promises about next week, but hopefully we will be back next week.
We probably won't be back next week.
Oh, I will make promises about next week. We won't be back.
Yeah.
That's going to wrap it up. Next week, we are headed to Kansas for the entire week to see family. And I am also excited about that because a few of our cousins have been just getting the disc golf bug. And it's really, really exciting to see. And I've kind of been, or we have kind of been trying to help them with form and whatever, mindset and whatever all else that we can help them with
as best we can. Basically just coaching them. Yeah.
Yes. And it's really fun again. And I do feel a little bit rusty on the coaching side of things and the form analysis type of things. Like I have a really hard time wording things as well as I used to. I feel like we used to kind of have a good formula for getting people to a better place just because we coached a lot more people at that point. But the last year or two, even, we haven't really coached as many people. The people that we coached have kind of gotten good and are kind of on their own now. And yeah. By coaching, I don't mean like some structured really coaching thing, but just mainly people that we get to know and are into disc golf and want help. And so we offer them the best of our advice.
Yeah. And about our cousins, you can find them on YouTube, actually. Tyler Stolzfus on YouTube.
Don't subscribe to him.
His channel isn't about disc golf.
But don't subscribe to him.
Yeah, don't subscribe to him. so we're trying to pass him in subscribers. So don't subscribe, but just go over there, look at his latest as of this recording video. It's called New Hobby !!! Whatever. He plays disc golf, so you can watch him there and you put a face to the name. And yeah, he also shouted us out on there, so thanks for the shout out anyway.
He shouted us out. Oh yeah, he did.
Yeah. So yeah, that's who that is, but and yeah. That's what that is. And yeah, if you enjoyed this,
what is the schedule? We did not look at the schedule. I don't even know. I'm not even sure what the schedule looks like, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, while he's looking at that, I'm just going to say, if you're enjoying this episode and this podcast in general, give us some love, give us some feedback, rate us, review us, whatever you can do wherever you're listening, do that. And yeah, we love feedback. And yeah, we're going to be coming back with some more episodes. Like we said, not next week, but hopefully in 2 weeks. And yeah, we want to keep continuing this. This is a lot of fun. A lot of fun just hanging out with you guys talking disc golf. So yeah,
and
what is the schedule?
We would absolutely love if you would give us a review on Apple Podcasts. We've been getting a number of ratings, but we have not gotten any real typed reviews. So it'd be awesome if we could get that. But the schedule is Beaver State Fling is this coming weekend. And it looks like, wow, there's actually a lot of good players there. I guess really most everybody's there.
Yeah.
But Paul McBeth, Calvin Heimberg, Kyle Klein, Gannon Burr, James Conrad, Kevin Jones, Adam Hammes, those are the top seven players that are in it. Drew Gibson, Anthony Brill, really most of the big names are there. So
that's just a silver series.
Yes, that's why. Okay. I'm surprised though.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay.
So yeah, that's gonna be really, really interesting. And then yeah, the next weekend is the Disc Golf Pro Tour Match Play Championship, which I don't know how to look who's qualified for that, but it is a qualifying event and only a handful of players will be there. And I think that'll be fun again because I think people enjoyed it last year. And then Preserve, which I'm really looking forward to Preserve. And that's June 24th, so
yeah,
a few weeks out. And it looks like Ricky will be back at Preserve.
Yeah, so that's nice to see. Can't wait to be cheering him on again. Not going to be there or anything, but
Paul McBeth is still the highest rated player. Anyways.
Okay. Wait, he is?
Highest rated.
I know.
Yeah.
I don't pay attention much to ratings.
I don't either. Anyway, let's get this closed out. So thank you guys for listening. Truly, it's fun to see that we have a handful of listeners.
More than a handful.
More than a handful. But
several handfuls.
We do have quite a few listeners by now.
Yeah.
Probably more than I expected, but yeah. it's fun to see that.
It's kind of hard to know, like, how many we should be expecting because you can't really see how many people are listening to podcasts. But, yeah, it's fun, so.
Yeah. And I think that's pretty much a wrap.
Thanks for listening.